see what we get. Maybe we'll record. Tom, say something important.
Something very, very important. Today is Friday.
Ah. So I think that should be enough. Who I am and what I'm doing, and then I'm going to ask you to tell me about who you are and what you're doing, and then we'll get into something a little more formal. I've been involved in working with rural Alaskans for quite a while. Since the early 70s, I've been working pretty much on documenting history and culture in different parts of Alaska, in the interior and on the North Slope. And as I've been traveling, I've come to appreciate the rich traditions that exist and the heritage that Alaskans have. And we're really at a very important crossroads, as there have been crossroads in the past, lots of them, but I think we're in a very important crossroad now in terms of the heritage that is Alaska. Unlike the native groups of the lower 48, we're approaching that crossroads with a good deal of strength, and the documentation that's taking place throughout Alaska is providing a basis for people to build in the future. Unlike in the lower 48, where people are struggling very hard to find tangible evidence from the past of what their ancestors were saying, here we're actively involved and there's money to be involved. And so it's possible. And it's going to be very interesting to see in 10 years what the effects of all that is. So I've been interested in documenting history and culture. I'm a professional anthropologist by training. What I enjoy doing is going out and listening to what people have to say about particular topics, writing them down, and then integrating that with the written sources, producing reports and documents. Because I see those pieces as very important in terms of, down the line, people having something to refer back to, know what Grandpa was thinking about or what was going on. You folks here at the Northwest Arctic School District and the Nana Museum are involved in the same sort of thing, I gather, although we'll hear more about that in a minute or two. As my career developed, I worked for a while with the National Park Service, which provided me an opportunity to do studies and do a lot of traveling. And I got involved in subsistence issues and other issues. But I decided that I really wanted to kind of break off and start on my own. So I started working with the University of Alaska on developing an oral history program. And the idea behind the oral history program was to produce two types of things. The primary document, the tapes, that other people could go back and refer to, and the reports and papers and all that other stuff. And as I looked around Alaska, I saw that there was a great deal of tapes and information that people didn't know about. So I took as my task the job of finding out what exists out there and bringing that together in the form of a computerized index. This is an index for the Northwest, and we've already found some problems with it as Rose and I were working with it. But I hope you'll take a minute and look through it, and you can see from this the type of organization that I'm trying to provide. And you may perhaps get some ideas as to how this could be useful in terms of developing your projects. So that's kind of where I am. In terms of ultimate goals, an ultimate goal that I've had for a long time is to try to understand the history and the cultures of people here in Alaska as completely as anyone possibly can. Because I think that's really where it's at, is understanding all the different perspectives and then trying to put it together in terms of a composite picture. And that's what really kind of turns me on. Enough about me. What are some of you folks doing? Julie, why don't we start with you?
I'm the librarian with the Materials Development Center. My task has been to collect documents that relate to the region, specifically materials that the curriculum development people can use as resources. What I seem to have inherited in the process are boxes and boxes and boxes of elders' conference tapes, and we're trying to catalog them, mm-hmm. identify subjects, and gradually have them transcribed and translated. Since we're faced with such a volume of tapes, it seems most useful to simply know generally what they contain and have a subject access to them, and then selectively transcribe and translate the contents.
So you come to this job with some specialized library skills, but a pretty big task in terms of the volume of material and some specialized problems in terms of translation, transcription, and those types of things.
Correct.
Okay. I'm a specialist one, and I work with Paul Antigu on cultural heritage things that, there was a book that was developed last year. We're in the stages of revising or in that heritage book and making it better to where the teachers can use it like as a complete lesson plan, and we're in the stage in that stage of our book right now.
What's the book on?
Crafts, subsistence, literature.
Mm-hmm.
That area, but right now we're just doing revision stuff.
Mm-hmm. When was the first time you heard the word subsistence?
First time I ate.
Someone used the word subsistence?
Yeah.
Hmm.
But not in English.
When was the first time you heard the word in English?
I get about third grade, I guess. I kind of learned how to say subsistence. I didn't know what it meant.
I've been really curious as to when subsistence became a concept, you know, when people started saying...
The concept was there all the time. But see,
part of
the way we finally figured out what it was that everybody was confusing us so damn much about subsistence and telling us all different meanings of subsistence. And to subsist to an Inupiaq is a totally different word subsistence. The subsistence used to mean is that living from day to day and trying to survive. And that's where the people used to live a long time ago. And they didn't know they were living it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, although they know they were living it, but I mean, that word subsistence right now what everybody, all the politicians, everybody else is trying to figure out what it is. And everybody is defining it to their own advantage. And all the people from Anchorage want to live just like me because they think they have the right, regardless of their Inupiaq and the Long Mi'kmaq. They think they can come over here to Northwest Alaska and live just like me. They think they can go out there and hunt. They think they know how to butcher. But when you want to define the word subsistence, they make it so with way, you know, it's like that simple word right there is, everybody have definition for it, but usually it's to their own advantage. Because to us, subsistence is our livelihood, is part of our thing that we lived with it all these years. And we did it. And that was everyday thing that we did. We lived to survive. That's what subsistence what meant to us. But I think it's just few recent years that the word actually really come out to where people try to define it. Even around here, then people begin to start getting confused too. See, what is subsistence? And here they did all these years. They start listening to all different definitions for it.
We have to have throughout the day these different diversions. So you'll have to bear with me because I have lots of questions that I'm going to pop out. And my specialized interest, I'll be asking you about my specialized interest, and hopefully you'll do the same with me. You know? So I'll be picking your interest.
Usually the Eskimos don't ask that much questions. They'll learn by watching, hearing, and seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll explain it till it's, you know, to where you can really understand it. And some people don't understand that. We know what your situation is, so you don't really know you want to answer, so we can understand that. But usually what we do is when we have meetings or all kind of things, the frustration come in is what, when people want to define something, you know, to me, something like this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we can understand, you know, where exactly you're coming from.
That's an important principle for me to keep in mind, and perhaps for you to keep in mind when you do things like the elders' conferences. Do you see that frustration developing at elders' conferences?
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. I think she was frustrated too for a while there. She was bringing out her things of different ways of sitting there trying to get the elders' conference to speak. And I mentioned to her that I said that a lot of times because of that, you know, it's like they say so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to learn the rest.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they'll tell you what you need to know. Then rest of it, knowing that you know the basics, in other words, you learn the basics. Once you learn the basics, then you have to learn by doing it by yourself, by making mistakes and doing it over and over again, till you have it correct yourself.
Okay. I didn't get your name.
Myra Jones.
Myra.
I'm an Inupiaq teacher trainer, and I train the bilingual instructors in the schools on the materials that the district developed.
Huh.
And this fall, I mean, since school began, I've been traveling to the village with Bob and training them on lesson planning and mastery testing. Any questions they have, we try to answer.
So you kind of take the material that Maggie develops and then you take it out?
Right now we have the language
mm-hmm.
levels A, B, and C, and that's what I've been mostly concentrating on.
Okay. It must be encouraging to be able to get beyond, I'll have to use another example. It must be encouraging to get beyond Thomas Jefferson and have kids read about and hear about their own ancestors in their own language.
Beyond Abe Washington.
Abe Washington.
I think that's the reason I couldn't use that example. What sort of reaction are you getting from teachers? Are you getting?
A lot of them need training on management, classroom management. Most of them are, not most, them are frustrated a lot of times. Because they need training, a lot more training.
Training in the subject matter, yeah. And in language?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some are literate and some are not.
Yes.
Some are just newly hired out of the streets, you know.
Yeah.
And that's mainly our problem.
Yeah, it's going to take time.
And this is my first year in this job, too.
Uh-huh.
Inkbound Material Development Center is in its first year of existence, too, and you were using the material that was developed by the district, but is in the revision stages too.
It's been revised so many times.
And once, really, in a book form, and now it'll be in book form after last year's printing with the revisions and stuff, and hopefully there'll be, you know, books that are developed to where they'll use them. I mean, they're using them right now, but, you know, we're in printing stages, different printing stages.
Are you feeling somewhat overwhelmed or frustrated that it's not finished and polished?
No.
You understand that it takes time? Back in the early 70s, I was up in the Canadian Arctic in a village called Rankin Inlet. The principal there was throwing these books out door. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I'm throwing out Dick and Jane." And I don't know what he was going to replace them with, though, because he didn't have any locally derived material that was significant to the people. And I guess, too, you get yourself into the qualm of thinking about are we going to develop a curriculum which is just local, or is it going to include things from outside? Okay.
I'm Carol Richards.
Carol.
And I'm the administrative assistant for the department. And I guess sometimes I feel like I'm once removed from the things that everybody else is doing. I'm just, one major aspect of my job is to make sure that we comply with district policies and procedures.
Which are?
Well, travel regulations, procedures,
okay.
Office procedures.
And make sure we spend our money stingily.
Right. I can control the budget.
Oh, you control the budget?
Well,
the purse string.
Pardon me?
The purse string. Okay. And Tom, why don't you give a little background on everybody? Do any of you know what Tom's doing?
Introduce him to one meeting I have in the world.
Research, right?
Right.
Rachel was good.
Getting a check. I had recently been hired to help do research on old photographs and documents and stories for the museum. And I hope to work with the school district and have an input of whatever goes into everything that goes around here, you know. And
so you're going to be doing some traveling to the villages?
Right, I hope to hit all of the villages, look at all the photographs, and the stories that go with the photographs.
Developing some resources.
Okay.
How do you hope to do this?
Pardon me?
How do you hope to do this?
Either by snow machine or plane.
Can I knock on people's doors?
Knock on people's doors. I was raised in the area. I know everybody in all the villages. I'm related to most of them. Hey, Uncle.
Yeah, before you can be shy and timid, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a procedure you're going to follow, isn't it?
Right, and I hope to learn that today here at this workshop.
Oh, no, but there was, but even more important than that, there's a procedure in the villages that you're going to follow in terms of the councils, or?
And then by asking the elders, and, you know, whatever turns them off or on, I'll just go naturally.
So you go in there as a person that's home around that night as an intruder?
I hope so.
Okay.
B.A. Bob Mullock Jr. Don't try to figure out the B.A. No. I'm just introducing myself like a Mullock Midas. They usually introduce themselves with that degree that they have. and we have a different way of introducing ourselves. Usually what we do is when we introduce ourselves to an elder Inupiaq person, we give them our Eskimo name. Then what they do is they try to figure out which line of family you coming from. Like if they know your parents, they say, I know you're Krugland, Nukab. Okay, that's my parents. And if they can't trace those two, what they'll do is they'll go the second route. Okay, who's your mother's folks? Then if they don't know, then they go around the other way. Who's your father's folks? Then what they do is they have to try to give a feel of which side of family you come from. So that's exactly what I would do. I introduce myself by just saying Akbik who? Then they go back to your genealogy. Mm-hmm.
Who were you named after?
Huh?
Who were you named after?
My grandma. But along the line, I adapt my Inupiaq name to a male. See, my original Eskimo name was Akpira, which is for my grandma, and she's an old lady. So as I began to start getting older, figure out, you know, which side of line I was, I find adapted that way. And I'm an evaluator specialist for the Inupiaq Material Development Center.
What does that mean?
Critique everything that everybody developed, like the materials, or go out to the each site and try to figure out what's all the gripes, the bottling of stuff you have, and in general to see if the materials that they develop are relevant to the area, or they don't stereotype us, and that they don't tell our kind of lies, you know, and stuff like that. And don't start telling it all along the line, you know, start exaggerating about about the Inupiaq stuff. So in general, what I do is just to make sure that everybody is, what they're saying is that it's sort of true with the best of my knowledge. At the same time, I try to work with the bilingual instructors in a sense of which way we need to train them in working and stuff that matter. What I do is I work closely with Myra, and me and her travel together to the villages, and we try to get a feel of what their needs are, what their frustration levels are. And then what we do is we try to set up in services in that with the data that we got.
Okay.
And I was the I taught 2 years in the elementary level, so I was a teacher before I got over here. And let's see, what else did I want to say? Oh, another thing about, I think we're in a unique state, you know, where everybody is finally concerned with, you know, just like our culture and our heritage and everything like this. First, we had white people come around here, and the intent was to wipe us all out, not, you know, in a way.
What do you say?
In fact, the attitude, they come around here, their nose is so high and stuff like that, and they're the ones that get the high-paying jobs and all the other stuff, you know, where it might be excused for ignorance and other stuff. But another thing, and the lower 48 Indians, the reason, you know, it's like they're looking for their thing is because at one time they're the older people were sort of massacred, and their children and their wives and all other stuff. So to a certain extent, you know, it's like they have, you know, sort of legitimate maybe excuse to a certain extent.
Why do you think you were named after your grandma?
What?
Why do you think you were named after your grandma?
Well, that's the way that people... Eskimo never dies. When he died, they got named. So, you know, it's like the Eskimos never die. Somebody always named you after that. And that's the way that we name our people. Somebody, you get named from your grandma, your grandfather, or somebody from your close relative.
Okay.
And like if I die today, she would probably have to have books. It depends on how popular you are.
Yeah, we might have one then.
Yeah. Or none. Right now I'm working on gathering material right now. Finally got the outline done, but it'll probably revise maybe 20 more times before.
So you're kind of digging into the history and seeing what the thinking was at the time of the line claims and how it sorted out since?
Yeah, I will be concentrating on the bills and the major parts that affect the people. And it's kind of wanted it to be like, localized, I mean, concentrate on like a northwest area.
Mm-hmm. So you'll be looking at things like Project Chariot and...
Looking into it, like Inuktitut, but right now, you know, I haven't found anything on the Inuktitut hardly except, mm-hmm. you know, a few news clippings.
Okay, Pam, tell us what you're doing.
I'm Pam Herman. I'm the director of the Nana Museum. We're putting together a whole range of programs over there, from research to some kinds of, you know, published products eventually, to new slideshows for the museum, to other kinds of things that will support artists and craftsmen in the region. Diana Howarth is working on a catalog of artists and craftsmen in the region. Ruthie Sampson is working on an archaeological history of the region for a new slideshow. We'll be showing some exhibits and some traveling shows from the State Museum over at the Atrium of the Human Services Complex, and staging some sort of theatrical productions of old stories at the museum during the summer, using some of the stuff that the National Bilingual Materials Development Center produced, and trying to do some bilingual. We're going to try to do some of them with an Inuktitut narrator telling the story and then acting it out with masks and costumes. Those are a few of the things that we're doing.
Keeps you busy.
Yeah, so the stuff is going to start to happen, start to be more visible.
What do you think history is? Anyone want to give some idea what they think history is?
Sorry, Kumar. Hey, what do you think? What kind of history is
there? They make a distinction between history and prehistory, which I've always found interesting.
Who does?
Well, it seems like that distinction is made in that you have a word for prehistory, meaning what? What is prehistory? When they talk about archaeological, an archaeological record of what happened in a place, they call that prehistory. Maybe because it something that occurred before, there was a record kept of what was going on. This is something that's unearthed from evidence that's not documentary. It's just physical evidence.
Just physical.
Yeah. So I guess there must be some kind of a distinction between that kind of history and written history. I've never exactly understood why they use that word, but I find that when you, whenever you're looking up old stuff from around here, it's prehistory. So it's almost like it didn't really, it's not part of history because nobody wrote it down. Or it's before history.
That's right, before recorded, yeah. Before their way of looking at it.
Right, before the academic community's way of looking at it. And then there's oral tradition, which I, you know, is a non-written historical record. Mm-hmm. A history that's passed down from one line to another and probably modified as it passes through many years. But that wouldn't be prehistory, would it?
Would it?
I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's all history to me.
Yeah, that's something we want to give some real thought to, is the question of explanations for the way people lived in the past, and the explanations that people had for the material that they found in old sites, as well as what the scientists explained from the ivory tower. But now I can't let you all off the hook that easily. I want to know more about what you think history is. Maggie, what do you think about when you think about history?
History, the way I thought of it last year,